You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
I'm pleased to welcome Gerard Lordahl back to our show. He's been visiting us for 20-something years now.
That's correct.
Almost as long as I've been doing this show. And we get him in whenever there's a real problem, too much rain, too much cold. Well, right now, we're already experiencing winter. We were experiencing winter before winter. So we thought that we would talk about things like how to care for our plants during the winter months. Gerard is the director of the open space greening at Grow NYC. And Gerard, I used to identify your open space greening program as a part of the city's Department of the Environment. Has that changed? Mm-hmm.
It has. The Harvard Business School came and evaluated our organization. This is our 40th year. And the results of that study was that we do a lot of great things, but part of the reason we're not as well known as we could be is because our name is a little confusing. It was formerly the Council on the Environment of New York City.
I had to say that every time you came on the show.
Yes, and you did a very good job saying it. But it was a very long name, and it was originally considered for an organization that was a think tank back in 1970. So we're more service-oriented, and Grow NYC fits us better these days.
You deal a lot with the community gardens throughout the city?
We do. In fact, this morning I was up in the Bronx at the PS 43 Winocqua Community Garden. We're delivering Christmas trees. Steiner Studio is doing a film with Jim Carrey called Mr. Poppins' Penguins. And they had trees, Christmas trees, that they wanted to donate to an organization that could distribute them. So I was up at the PS 43 garden in the Bronx just this morning giving out these Christmas trees.
Well, I was thinking about buying an evergreen, a live evergreen. It bothers me that we cut these trees down every year and then they go stale in the house and then we have to clean up all of those pine needles as we take them out to the street and they lie there for a few days. I was thinking, why not just get an evergreen and put it in the house and then later put it outside? I have a terrace. Is that a good idea?
It's a little more difficult than you think in the Northeast for us. And I just want to go back and mention one thing about that. Christmas trees are farmed. So it's not that you have growers going into parkland and are cutting down Christmas trees. They're farmed and they're replaced.
No, I understand that.
Yeah. And they never harvest all at once. In fact, the Christmas tree growers will probably be contacting you shortly to tell you how 1 acre of Christmas tree farmland produces enough oxygen for 18 people. So they are farmed, and people do have an issue with that. So you have alternatives, like in a small apartment, let's say, instead of a Christmas tree, you could grow a rosemary topiary shaped like a Christmas tree. As far as an evergreen, you can get small evergreens, but the issue is right now the ground is frozen. So you want your Christmas tree through the Christmas holiday. When you go to put it outdoors, the ground is frozen, and unless you have prepared the hole for that Christmas tree, it's going to be very difficult digging it. So that's you have to prep it around Halloween. Indoor temperatures in the apartment are too high for most evergreens, and the humidity in our apartments is too low. So often it's very challenging unless you have a hobby greenhouse where you could maintain these plants. Some people are successful with them, but you do have some options if you don't want to do a cut tree.
Well, you've already talked me out of it. But I still am happy I have a ficus that's doing quite well.
Yes.
And ficuses live indoors all the time.
Yeah, and there are, you know, a lot of people of Caribbean cultures, they use tropical trees and branches as Christmas trees, and that's perfectly fine. So whatever you choose.
We invite listener calls, by the way, when Gerard is here. Our number here is 646-829-3985. That's 646-829-3985. You can also leave a comment on our show page at WNYC.org. And in case you don't know how to do that, go to WNYC.org, look, scroll to the bottom. You'll see the list of all the different shows. Click on ours and then just follow the instructions. Somebody's already done that. A question that is totally unrelated to winter, but I thought I would take care of it now. This person says, I have basil growing in a pot on my windowsill. I planted it in September, and about a month ago I noticed that there were little white bugs on the underside of the leaves. Are they harmless? How do I get rid of them if they are harmful to the basil? And I'm going to add, and do they add a certain taste to the pesto?
Protein. If they're flying, they're most likely aphids. And if they're not flying, they could be mealybug, which looks like little pieces of cotton or scale. And if that's the case, you could get a Q-tip and some alcohol and dab those white bugs, if they're not moving, with some alcohol and remove them with the Q-tip. Mechanical removal is often the best way.
Now, alcohol doesn't affect the basil?
No, just rubbing alcohol. That's fine. So that's what I would recommend. And if it's the flying aphid, non-pesticide control indoors, you could put up those sticky insect traps.
For houseplants that are indoors, is there any difference if there's winter, if it's winter or summer?
Oh, yeah. A good friend of mine, Joseph Emmer, who was past president of the New York Cacti Society, he always reminded me that you should stop watering your cacti and succulents from December to March to recreate what it's like for them in the desert. And it's the same thing for similar other plants. When they're indoors, there are different conditions. As I said earlier, the humidity is lower indoors, so there are challenges that you have to deal with.
There are other challenges that people face during the holiday season. Some people go away,
right?
For example, but others are in the house all the time, and that creates other problems.
It does. And I wanted to just mention a few things. I see lots of people walking around with holiday plants that aren't protected. It's with the wind chill today, it's 20 degrees. Yet as I walk around the city, I see people carrying their holiday poinsettias with no wrapping paper around it. And these are tropical plants.
They come from Mexico.
Yes, exactly. In fact, the name is derived from our first first ambassador to Mexico, Dr. Poinsett, in 1850. But it's a tropical plant. It likes warm weather. So when you go to your garden center or your florist and you buy that poinsettia, most of the florists know and the garden setters know to wrap it up. But you can't go from 70 degrees to 20 degrees outdoors. You're going to shock that poinsettia. And then when you bring it into the apartment, often the leaves will drop. So make sure when you carry these tropical holiday plants around with you, whether they're Christmas cactus or cyclamen or poinsettia, they get wrapped up and protected from the freezing cold.
And then because that's also a plant that's used to being in a tropical area, a hot area, should we put a lamp near them or is sunlight okay?
Poinsettias like full sun, and many of your listeners send me information about growing poinsettias all year round. And quickly, what you need to do is give poinsettias after the holiday 10 weeks of uninterrupted sunlight for 9 hours. And you could grow it as a houseplant after the holidays. But then in the spring, around April or so, stop watering it, cut it back to about 4 inches. And if you have the ability to put it on the terrace or outside through the summer, do that. And then what you want to do around October or so, you have to subject it to, as I said, 10 weeks of uninterrupted sunlight for about 9 hours. It's a big job, and a lot of people don't want to go through that hassle.
Should they use grow lights?
Well, what they do is they'll put it by a window and then create a box with black plastic over it, let's say, or put it in a closet for like 14 hours of darkness, because these plants will set bud when they're affected by a particular length of daylight, and that's how you get poinsettias to bloom. So it is to rebloom. It is a process. But the other thing I wanted to mention regarding the holiday are indoors, there are some hazards that you have to watch out for that I wanted to share with your listeners. One thing, mistletoe. If any of you use the holiday mistletoe, those berries are very poisonous to pets in particular, and it can cause stomach and heart problems for your pets.
So, do they fall off?
Yes, they do fall off readily. So the ASPCA.org, that website, has a great list of 17 common poisonous plants that can affect your cats and your dogs. Another thing for your listeners is holly berries and also the leaves of holly. If you have a cat or a dog that's chewing on holly, it could cause nausea and vomiting. And the last thing I wanted to remind your listeners are lilies. Lilies are very toxic to cats, so be careful around Easter time having lilies. So there are things that you can do. You could get pet-safe bouquets and bring them in the house. Amaryllis is another example. And go to the ASPCA.org website and check out the poisonous plants. You'd be surprised. Apples and apricots can be toxic to dogs because the seeds have cyanide. So that's information
I always knew about chocolate.
Chocolate. And I'm glad you brought up chocolate because if you want to design a garden that's pet friendly, and it's possible that your pet and your garden can coexist, people will use mulch to stop a dog from digging in the garden. But you should not use cocoa hulls as mulch because that, of course, can be toxic to dogs.
A listener asks if poinsettias are poisonous.
I'm so glad that question came up, and I knew it was going to come up. There's
okay,
been...
wait. Let's take a caller who actually
good. Okay.
Has more information on that or wants more information on that. Taryn from Lefferts Gardens. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi. Happy holidays. Merry Christmas. Thank you very much. Yes, I'm in Lefferts Gardens, and I'd like to comment on Gerard's work on Nostrand Avenue and Empire. It really uplifted the community. We want to thank you for that. And I was wondering about poinsettia. You mentioned some other things, but that poinsettia, I heard, can be extremely poisonous to particularly dogs. And secondly, there's a rumor going around that you've come up with a way to design a dog-friendly garden, and all the gardeners in this area are wondering what your ideas are and if you'd like to share them.
Oh, great questions. Let me say that poinsettias are in the euphorbia family, and it, from the research that's been done by the USDA and Ohio State, they've been telling us that poinsettias are overrated in their toxicity, and they've done extensive studies where they've subjected, unfortunately, lots of rats, I think, lab rats, to large amounts of this sap, this irritating sap or latex. And both the USDA and Ohio State have come to the conclusion that poinsettias are overrated in toxicity. There might be some slight irritation to mouth and stomach, but there are no toxicity symptoms in animals from poinsettia. So there's your answer for that.
Thank you.
And as far as dog friendly, yeah, I have dogs of my own. So one thing you can do, if your dog is bored, they tend to dig and run deep paths in the garden. So if you build raised beds, that often can prevent some of that problem. Also, meet your dog's exercise needs. If your dog is bored, if he doesn't get enough exercise, he's going to dig in your garden. He's going to step on your plants. The other thing is that dogs naturally don't travel in straight lines. This is something I found interesting. They rarely travel in straight lines. And what does that mean? Well, in the garden, you should build curves into your paths in the garden, and that adds more to the natural movement of the dogs. If you're going to do compost in the garden, put your compost in another area of the garden and contain it in some way.
Because the dog's going to go and start eating that stuff.
And, you know, urine is a problem in the vegetable garden. However, urine is high in nitrogen, and dog feces is not acceptable in the compost pile, so you don't want to put any animal byproducts. But you will find that when a dog urinates in a garden area, it adds nitrogen to the soil, and your plants will actually look greener, but you certainly don't want your vegetables that you're going to be harvesting in that area. And then if your dog does urinate in the area of the garden, if you could saturate that soil within 8 hours with water, that's the best way to dilute it. So those are my tips on gardening with dogs.
And thank you so much for your call, Taryn.
Thank you.
Our number here again is 646-829-3985. That's 646-829-3985. 3985. You can also leave a comment on our show page at WNYC.org. My guest is Gerard Lord-Dahl, who is the director of Open Space Greening as part of the Grow NYC department that is formerly the Council on the Environment of New York City. We'll be back with more of your calls and a few of my questions after this. We're back with Gerard Lord-Dahl, Director of Open Space Greening, part of Grow NYC. And we're taking your calls at 646-829-3985, or you can leave a comment on our show page at WNYC.org. And Layman from Carroll Gardens has been hanging on patiently. Hi.
Hi, how are you? Thank you for taking my call. I have a wilting Christmas cactus that I can't do anything with. It's not in direct sunlight, and it's I can't figure out if I'm watering too much or too little, but it doesn't like me right now.
Well, Christmas cactus is related to the succulents and other cactus, and they like to stay on the dry side. So definitely keep it dry. It sounds like that's not your issue. Your issue is the sunlight. It needs good sunlight. And then to get your Christmas cactus to bloom, like the poinsettia that I was talking about earlier, they're sensitive to the length of daylight. So what I do to get my Christmas cactus flowering around Halloween time, I put them by the cool window, and the shorter days in the end of October and the cooler temperature causes the Christmas cactus to set bud. So they like it cool. They like to experience that shorter length of daylight that you get from October around Halloween up until Christmas. If you can do that and expose it to some 60-degree temperatures consistently from Halloween to December, you'll see buds setting.
Does that mean she sits it on top of the radiator? Then she gets
no,
too much
not heat. Near the radiator at all. Keep it away from the radiator near a cool window that is close to 60 degrees from late October into December.
But I don't know whether we've had 60 degrees at any cool window in my house.
Well, our average temperature in the apartment is about 70. And if you have a room that stays a little cooler, or if you have a terrace or something like that, you could put it there.
Okay.
And how much should I water it?
Let it dry out completely between waterings. I water my Christmas cactus twice a week sparingly.
Okay.
And then remember, stop watering it completely through after it flowers through till March. That simulates the desert.
Thank you so much.
Great.
Now, in the desert, the water comes from rain when it finally arrives.
Right.
But our water comes from pipes, and it is fluoridated. Is fluoride good for our plants?
Actually, some plants are really sensitive to fluoride. Those people who have houseplants like Dracaena or palm or spider plants, you may notice that the tips of the plants start to turn brown. That's often a symptom of fluoride. We need fluoride in our diet. We have to have it in our water. But then there's
none of these plants have cavities. That's the good part.
Right. The hard water, however, is another issue. You know, we soften our water through a process that includes adding salt to the water, but hard water contains like calcium, magnesium, and other minerals. So, I mean, this is unrealistic, but plants would prefer natural rainfall or filtered water. And I know you're rolling your eyes, Leonard. We're not going to put our houseplant water through a filtering system.
I'd have to have the biggest Brita in the world. But the hard water usually comes from wells.
Right.
So we're not talking about people in the city, but there are a number of people in our listening area who I'm sure rely on well water for all of their needs. They do soften them.
Right, and I understand we don't have hard water because it destroys the pipes. Mm-hmm. That's part
of
the problem.
Also, we rely on rainwater. That's what fills our reservoirs.
Yeah, so if you can, you know, ideally filtered water or rainwater, put your plants out on a terrace. The other thing is there tends to be a buildup of salt many times with certain when you water, because of this hard water and the minerals come to the surface, some of your listeners may notice a white crust on the top of their soil. That's usually from bottom watering, and the salt residue goes to the top of the soil in like a white crust form. The best way to remove that is to water from the top down and to flush that salt through the plant. So that's a suggestion about watering. This year we designed with some community garden groups 20 new rainwater harvesting systems. So we're capturing rainwater, and your listeners and homeowners, whoever can do that on a tool shed or their terrace, it's always recommended.
A listener writes in, what kind of fertilizer is good to use for plants, and how much should one fertilize plants during the winter months?
As I said earlier to the previous caller, in the wintertime, your plants do slow down. So most horticulturists recommend that you stop fertilizing completely in the wintertime in the Northeast when the plants are not actively growing. The other suggestion is to, of course, use organic fertilizer. A lot of the commercial companies are coming up with organic lines of fertilizer. However, many of the community gardeners grow and create their own compost. And it was interesting, Leonard, I got a lot of calls from the last show because of a controversial statement that people told me we discussed, or I made, about community gardens being a depository for compost. So I just want to clarify that. As a result of that, we did do a survey of hundreds of community gardens in the city, and we found that, yes, indeed, there are 20 community gardens that will accept public compost as long as they're prepared in advance. So we're not saying that the public should drop their compost off at any community garden, but you certainly should contact the community garden, ask permission, and the public should know that in New York City, 20 community gardens do willingly accept it. Compost is a good fertilizer, or fish emulsion for houseplants as well.
My guest is Gerard Lordahl, Director of Open Space Greening, Grow NYC, and this is WNYC. We're also available on the internet at wnyc.org, and you can download us as a podcast. There are all sorts of different ways you can access us. I'm Leonard Lopate. We're taking your calls at 646-829-3985. And, Gerard, before we go on to some more calls, this is every time we've talked during the winter, we've gotten calls about what we do with bulbs. Is this a good time to be dealing with bulbs?
Well, it is and it isn't, and I'll explain that. Since about mid-December, the ground has been frozen. As you know, it's cold outside. We did some late planting of bulbs up in the Bronx at PS 43 with a group of school kids, and there was a crust on top of the soil in mid-December. So now we have a couple of inches of frost. You would have to dig through several inches of frozen soil if you needed to plant your daffodils, your tulips, any of those spring flowering bulbs that you didn't get a chance to put in the ground. If you want them to bloom in the spring outdoors in your garden, you have to get them in the ground. Or you could put them in your refrigerator for 10 weeks in a brown paper bag and simulate that outdoors, and then transfer them to a pot of soil in the spring. And going through that cold process in your refrigerator would cause them to bloom in the spring.
Kathleen from Long Island, hi, you're on the air.
How are you? I just want to say happy holidays to you guys.
Thank you.
And Gerard, I have to say I've learned so much from you. Thank you so much for all your wonderful tips. I'm here with my girlfriend Dolores, and my question to you is, I'm not quite sure when I should be pruning my roses bushes. Her husband, he's got a really green thumb, and I admire his work. His name is Herman, and I just want to try to be more like him. And I was wondering if you can help me with my rose bushes, maybe a couple of tips you could give me.
Yeah, absolutely. This is a thorny problem.
Absolutely. And this question comes up quite a bit because some people hear that the wintertime is a good time to prune your roses. So it's true. When the roses are dormant, especially climbing roses, the late winter or actually the early winter or the late spring when the roses are dormant is the recommended time. You want to do it when there's no chance of any new growth forming in the winter. When we have Indian summers and we prune roses and it gets warm, that creates new growth, and then it could get hit by a winter frost and damage the plant. So do your pruning. It's often comfortable now. Some people prefer February, but if it's very cold in February, you might want to prune your roses now. Prune them down to the base. If they're a shrub rose, prune out any dead canes for a climbing rose, and prune to an outside live-facing rosebud, and that will help shape your roses for the spring.
Okay?
Thank you so much. That was wonderful.
And we thank you, and we go now to Lee. Lori from Oceanport, New Jersey. Hi, Lori. You're on the air.
Hi there. Happy holidays. I have a very sad olive tree. It's potted. I had it out on the deck. It developed a brown scale. I used an organic spray. It seemed to revive it. But when I brought it in the house, when the weather changed, all of the leaves started falling.
Mm-hmm.
It's looks like it's dead, except for one little green leaf sprout. But the branches, I cut it back a bit, and the branches, those seem to, they're leafless, but they are flexible.
Mm-hmm. Now, I don't know. Now, I don't know whether to group this with another question from Vivian from Queens, who wants to know how to winterize her fig tree. Are all trees the same here?
Figs and olives, all these Mediterranean crops. It's great. Do you know the botanical name? You're calling it an olive tree. I'm just curious. Do you know the botanical name? Is it a ficus?
No, I don't believe it is a ficus.
When you say it's an olive tree, I'm wondering if you know the botanical name.
I'm sorry.
That's okay. All right. Well, in general, scale is a nuisance indoors, and it's a very tough insect. It's a small insect that has a hair-like mouth part that it injects into the stem or underneath the leaves of the plant and sucks out the juice from the plant. Because it has such a hard outer shell, it's difficult to kill. So often, without using toxic pesticides, what's recommended is you get Q-tips if you have a small number of them. And again, with the alcohol, you physically remove them from the stem and the leaves of the plant. If that's not possible and you have too many scale, use a hose or bring them into your bathtub and squirt lukewarm water on the plant to physically remove the scale. That will help. If it's outdoors and you have scale, you could get a scrub brush with some mild soapy water and go up the bark of the tree and remove the scale with a scrub brush with mild detergent. And that will help.
Okay.
Well, this is in a 10-inch pot, so it's relatively small, and the fact that most of the leaves are gone, does that mean that the plant, is there any, does it
scratch
mean
the bark? Yeah, scratch the bark and see with your nail if there's any green under there. And if it's not green and it's brown, prune off everything that's dead. When you prune off everything that's dead, see what's left. And if you think that's substantial enough to continue growing, keep it well watered, put it by the sun, and look for those scales and physically remove them.
Thank you so much for your call. Joel in Westchester asks, I use the juice from a compost pot to add to my water for my houseplants. Is that a good idea?
Yeah, compost tea. That's a great fertilizer. If you do compost, you can have the residual liquid from the compost, which is referred to as compost tea, which is highly nutritious, used as a fertilizer.
A listener wondered whether you said that amaryllis is okay for pets.
Amaryllis has toxins in it. It's on the list. So, again, I would recommend there's so many of them, but amaryllis is a problem, and you'll see it listed along with lilies and elephant's ear and Christmas rose and caladium and cyclamen as well. So go to ASPCA.org, poisonous pets, and you'll see that full list.
We have very little time, so we can't get to everything, but I wanted to read this one. Christopher in Brooklyn says, my jade plant appears to be infected with a fungus. Tiny dots of white fuzz grow at the joints of the leaves, and if not removed regularly, it will kill that leaf. When rubbed off, it comes off in long, wispy tendrils. The fuzz seems to be spreading to other plants now that the windows are closed. How do I kill the stuff?
Yeah, long, spindly tendrils. That's interesting. It sounds like they might have webs. I'm wondering if you have spider mites. That's a problem of jade. So, again, physically try to remove these plants and try to repot the jade in some sterilized soil, and that might remove that pest problem.
Now, in the past, you used to invite people to send you things at your office.
Yes. We get lots of inquiries. We get things in the mail. I get telephone calls from your listeners, letters, soil samples. I get leaf samples to identify. So your listeners can send their email questions to plantlot@AOL, PLANTLOT at AOL.com, and I'd be happy to answer their questions.
Oh, does the city give you a big budget to handle all of that?
Not that big, but I love the work.
Emily from Brooklyn wants to remind everyone that the Union Square Green Market, maybe some other green markets, are happy to take compost or anything that doesn't involve meat.
That's right. Yes. So we have 50 of our markets around the city. As you know, you're a very loyal green market shopper, and many of them will be taking compost. And, of course, the Lower East Side Ecology Center, Christina Datz, has compost available in Union Square as well. So, sure, that's a great suggestion. Thanks, Emily.
And just one more thing. If you have worms in your compost and it's outside in this cold weather, are the worms okay?
Yeah, the worms are able to survive. They go deep into the ground, so they know how to handle this cold weather, so it's all right.
I was really worried about my worms. Gerard Lordahl is Director of Open Space Greening. You can reach him at – what's your email address?
You could reach me at plantlot@AOL.com or glordahl@grownyc.org.
L-O-R-D-A-H-L. Thank you again, Gerard. It's always a pleasure to have you here.
Thank you, Leonard. Same here.